I'll just introduce, I guess, a double act with Professor Henry Atkinson, the Yorkshire Elder, who's a consultant and lectures in the Faculty of Education at Monash University, and at the same institution, Dr. Zane Maraya, Senior Lecturer in Indigenous Education in Faculty of Education at Monash. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. I guess, first of all, what I must do is acknowledge traditional owners of country. I'd like to thank the Elder that gave us welcome to country, so much appreciated. I also pay my respects to the ancestral spirits of this country. And I suppose we value the unique status of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as the original owners and custodians of traditional lands and waters. We respect and recognise and continue customary laws, beliefs and traditions.
And we believe that education plays a crucial role in the reconciliation process. Reyes and Cheney talk about this when they say that educational aspects of reconciliation must go hand in hand with a strategic and determined effort to give substance to the word through tangible outcomes which make reconciliation a reality in our communities, workplaces, institutions and organisations. Above all, meaningful reconciliation must deliver justice and equity for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and recognise rights as Indigenous people.
So what we do at Monash, first of all, we try to create partnerships between traditional owners and certainly the wider community. And for education, for our people, my people, certainly the young people, is that without those partnerships, by bringing community in, the parents, we won't achieve anything. We won't achieve good education for our younger children. So the unit that we teach at Monash, it explores Indigenous and non-Western traditional education for both children and adults within a global perspective. It will support you to expand your understanding of Indigenous cultures and consider Indigenous and local forms of education alongside new imperatives for nationwide states. Competitiveness within global market of critical importance will be an examination of positioning of Indigenous and traditional education systems within the nation state. The impact of colonisation, issues pertaining to the retention and maintenance of Indigenous and traditional knowledge through education, current thinking on intellectual property rights as they pertain to Indigenous peoples and local communities, and the role of international organisation in protecting, preserving and maintaining Indigenous and traditional education systems.
Okay, what one of the things about this unit that's important to note is that it nests within what we call an Indigenous partnership strategy, very similar to what Wendy was talking about at Charles Sturt. We've had this in place now for about 9 years. This is our third iteration, our third strategic plan. We're still here to tell the story. It's been a tough journey. And in that process, I want to acknowledge people from Monash here, Peter Anderson, Linda Nicholson, and somebody we hadn't met until today, which we believe is one of the new staff members at Monash. Welcome. And we've certainly been having some very lively debates at Monash, but being such an enormous university, we often don't have these sorts of conversations. And Henry and I have been working on this partnership strategy now for all this time. And it focuses on teaching. It's got four aspects: teaching and learning, which we'll talk about today and focus on. Research, which is both for Indigenous and non-Indigenous researchers in the faculty coming together. I'll point out that it's faculty-based, so this isn't a university-wide initiative, and it certainly was taken, not given, in the best negotiations with these structures. I'm not really sure that we can rely on the structures that are being put in place, as Martin's speech very clearly showed. Power is taken, not given. Yeah. And it was only because we had a war chest of money and we could actually do this without having to, kowtow all the time. And I think in the start, you should get money first. It'd be our advice in this process. And we focus on research, staff development. The unit has moved from, at first I was supposed to teach it by myself as a non-Indigenous person, to now it predominantly being run by Indigenous people. And I think that that's important to note, that there has to be capacity building. And Indigenous knowledge rests in bodies. So if there's no Indigenous people in the academy, then all the goodwill in the world isn't going to change that. Now, Henry and I both had significant battles with our faculty in our university to make sure that we pay Aboriginal people properly. And Gary's point about paying people to come in is absolutely correct. At senior level, for the expertise that they have never been paid for before. Aboriginal people have better things to do with their time, like everybody else. And I figure if an Aboriginal person's coming in, they get paid the same as me, or if not more, if it's an expert status. So we've had battle after battle after battle, and again last week, the sessional budget that we've managed to carve out was drawn back again, and I had to fight for it again. It feels a bit like all the other arguments that we have, that it's nothing is set. You know, you always have to be fighting for these things. So staffing's a huge issue, and you can't have cultural safety in a faculty without Aboriginal people there. And you can't have cultural safety without lots of Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islanders in that environment. And so there's also the issues of management. And there's also the issues of getting Aboriginal people and non-Indigenous people actually working together, but the people in these mainstream jobs actually see it as part of their job to do. So we have key performance indicators, we have key result areas, and my singular one was to get Aboriginal people employed in the faculty. And that's not seen as an academic... It's not seen as something you do as an academic, particularly. So those of you who are white academics out there, put as your key performance indicator to get Aboriginal people employed. And that's the only one. Don't worry about publications. Don't worry about research. Don't worry about any of those things. Get more Aboriginal people employed. I mean, you know, we live to tell a tale. I eat. I still, you know, have a good life, even though I haven't got my 40,000 publications that one is supposed to need. And I think you just got to do it. And I think no matter what our positions are, we've got to do it. So that's the partnership strategy. You can download it on the web, and we'll catch you. We've got a little... it's all in the public domain, so you can download it and have a look at it.
And could I just add to that, is that all universities, in my opinion, should be looking at Indigenous employment overall within all faculties. And somebody spoke earlier about... what should be within some of these faculties? You know, there is ways that whatever faculty that is operating, you can put something into that curriculum. Somebody spoke about if somebody goes out on country, and if it's to do with, I don't know, just growing trees, you know, that there is an Indigenous perspective in protecting country and knowing some of the knowledge of Indigenous peoples, particular part of country. And as you all know, that you know, we're already multicultural Indigenous peoples. We've always been that way. And we've got different ideas and, you know, our own cultures, our own language, our own beliefs. Unless these faculties, you know, take on what I'm saying, we'll still be at the same level that we're doing. So it would be good if all universities takes on board to make sure that everybody is on the same platform. So the unit that we're involved in, we consciously encourage the students to become curious, independent in their learning, with the feeling that they are respected on their learning journey. So the key principle of scaffolding provides us with a broad concept of how we engage students to awaken their curiosity, their capacity to examine what they believe about Indigenous Australians and other traditionally oriented peoples, no matter whether the student has grown up here in Australia or has experienced a different set of cultural expectations about Indigenous and traditional peoples. And regardless of what their previous personal or professional experiences have been, everyone benefits from being treated respectfully. But passion, enthusiasm and respect are not enough. Teaching students from a widely different setting, our objective is to employ our deep knowledge of the field to demonstrate that there is a growing crisis facing mainstream educators in the delivery of education to students from Indigenous and other traditionally oriented communities because of persistent failure in the mainstream system to deliver high quality education, particularly in rural and remote locations. Given the diversity of opinions and experience of students, we cannot assume that students will understand what we want from them. Immediately, they are confronted with something both common and familiar, a female white lecturer and an uncommon, unsettling a male, an Aboriginal lecturer. For most of this is the first time they have even had a chance to speak with an Aboriginal person. Equally confronting, rarely has any student in this unit been taught by an Indigenous person throughout their entire previous education. So what I'm saying here is that, you know, we have students becoming educators, expecting them to teach our young people, and I have never ever met an Indigenous person. So what we're saying is that, you know, do this unit, get to know some of the protocols, how to go about meeting some of the people. I think somebody mentioned it earlier in one of their talks, how do you go around, you know, getting into meeting some of the people. There are certain ways that you can do that, and we teach the student educators coming through. Therefore, it is essential that our expectation of our students are made clear and transparent from the start. This unit is structured to provide direct mediated learning for the first 6 weeks. The capacity to become critical in learning happens later in the unit. It is sequential outcome that is fostered by the students consciously engaging their learning process and attending to the experiences that they have of growing, hunting, or gathering their own food. So what we do is, teach them what our old people used to do, what our people do today. We don't expect them to go out and hunt and gather like our people, but use it in some sense that you can go and hunt and gather and then put it into terms and think about how Indigenous people do. Because some of the young people of today, non-Indigenous people, this is, that they don't even know how to cook. So, what their grandparents knew has not been transferred on to them. So what we're saying is that, you know, our old people and the young Indigenous student has still got that knowledge, whereas that knowledge has been lost from the non-Indigenous side. So we try to bring that together and make them think how Indigenous people think and can go and do things. And trying to bring in the cultural side also, is that, you know, if you're in the classroom, whatever you do with your class, put something into your curriculum that supports the non-Indigenous and the Indigenous student in the way Indigenous people are being looked at today.
So we're sort of bringing together in the activity that Henry talks about. We've got a sort of our sort of pedagogical. It's a provocative pedagogy. We intend to shake them up with all the issues of safety that have been raised, but the intention is to shake them up and get them to think. And so this sort of thing that's running in the background is supposed to say to people, how much of this history do you actually know? I mean, this is how many people, a handful of people, should be well known. Most of the students won't know even the people that have been up so far. What we're trying to do is somewhere between critical pedagogy and experiential learning, and trying to create that space where the students are both confronted and supported at the same time. And there's a lot of, this first 6 weeks is hell usually. There's a lot of fightingness, there's a lot of arguing, there's a lot of, but you treat me like I don't know anything. We're going, And we've got to really support each other at this stage. This is taught with Henry and Bernadette Atkinson, his daughter, and a couple of other people have taught with us over the various years, and we get hammered for the first 6 weeks. Gary pointed out, and there's a lot of you are nodding as well. So what we're trying to do is build a familiar framework where they've got to do an essay, and we're also doing this hunting and gathering thing. So I'll just give you an idea of some of the curriculum things we cover, and then Henry will talk about the hunting and growing and gathering as a specific assessment. What we're trying to do is we consulted broadly with a lot of the communities that work with us, and individual traditional owner families, schools, parents, teach body, rep bodies, all sorts of things. over the last few years. We've changed it a lot. It's actually moved on quite substantially from its beginnings. And what we start off with is the big picture, the rights thing. So a lot of Aboriginal people in this country have given their lives to fighting, even just to get the draft Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People across to a Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. But most of the non-Indigenous students in the class would only know that, that wouldn't even know that Australia hadn't supported it. Most students are really shocked to find that Australia was one of the nation states blocking the work that's been done by people. So there's a whole history that keeps coming up, history. And I sort of have these discussions with Henry, and we sort of say, well, why do we have to keep going back to teach history all the time? It's so frustrating when we're in education. But if we don't teach it, like Michelle was saying, if we don't teach the history, nobody is going to teach them. And they're not going to have the skills to go and find out about the history, and they're not going to get it properly in their heads what that history means to Indigenous people. So we go a lot over history, and they really don't like it. They really, really do not like doing so much history. We're doing science. Why should we have to do history? We teach maths. Why do we have to do history? So there's a lot of questions that we've got to just come up with creative, resilient answers every semester. And then we go into a discussion of the rights of Indigenous and traditional peoples in the nation state, global economic competitiveness, the role of international organisations, and try and locate some of the human rights arguments that are being made by Aboriginal leadership alongside the economic rights development arguments. Try to get students beyond this thing where they see Aborigines fighting in the public domain. You know, well, why can't they all agree? Why can't they all say the same thing? Why can't they just tell us what they want? This is all stuff that you're getting from, and these are fourth year teachers. These are teachers who are going to go out and teach kids next year. And so they need, and we need to be articulating the day-to-day public debates that are happening out there with these teachers, and it's constantly being thrown back at us and invalidating everything that we're doing on a daily basis with them. Because it's like, well, they can't agree. How do you know? How can you be experts when they can't agree? So we've got this conversation all the time. So what we try to do is give them a raft of familiar things, text-based assessment of an assignment where they've got to make sense of a particular initiative, and then we feed them into this hunting, growing, and, you know, and you're always in this position where you're essentialising. We're playing with essentialising and symbolic positioning of Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people all the time. Because people say, well, if you're going to get people to go and hunt and fish, well, I live in the city and I don't hunt and fish and I'm Indigenous. It's like, that's the point. It's like, do you need to go and hunt in a traditional way to be an Aboriginal person? No. Can you take a gun out? Or do you have to go and catch it by hand? These are all the level of thing that they start off talking about in this activity. And what we're trying to do is wrap a framework of familiar things around them, like linguistic and cultural maintenance and all sorts of things like that, so they can get a handle on the intellectual stuff while they're taking the emotional journey. And I think Gary was absolutely correct in that emotional journey is so hard for them, especially when you've got a contemporary public debate which is so divisive and so contested.
And I suppose hunting and gathering is, you know, where my people can go, should be able to go and hunt and gather without a licence, having to pay for a licence and to even fish or to kill a kangaroo or to even to carry on your culture, to go and scar a tree, make a corman or make a boomerang. You have to get permits, certainly in Victoria and New South Wales and by the looks of Northern Territory. So we have to do all those things. And, you know, so it's taken away our rights of what we should be able to do. So we try to, you know, get the students to go out and do those things. And then we say, well, you know, we have our own economy by being able to go out and hunt and gather. Can you do that? Can they go out and hunt and gather? And they find out that they can't go and do that. They have to go and buy a licence or a fishing line and all those sort of permits. Then they find out that they can't hunt and they can't, you know, fish or catch a fish because they might go and do it at the wrong time, or they might try to grow something at the wrong time, so they end up going to the supermarket. So that means you've got to, you know, use money, whereas sometimes Indigenous people have not got those resources to be able to do that. So it's a learning process for those people who try and understand how, you know, all the obstacles that are put against us, especially when, you know, those people have not, my people have not had a really good education. To have jobs where you get a good income coming, to be able to go and do whatever you like. So we're trying to put something into the minds of the new educators that, you know, my people need a good education to be able to be competitive, to have good jobs. Until that can happen, you know, we'll always be fighting the struggle. You see some images at the back of me of some people that, you know, struggle for the rights of Indigenous peoples and for the rights of good education for the young ones. And that has not been forthcoming to this stage. So what my colleague here and I, what we're trying to achieve is that young Indigenous educators that are coming through now will be able to translate or transfer their knowledge onto other peoples as well for the future, where these guys don't have to go through the struggle of those guys up there. We've only taken one footstep. We've a long, long way to go. And until we have a good education system for my people, the younger generation, we'll still be struggling. So I hope that what my colleague and I are doing now is, you know, making that struggle just a little bit easier. And I would like to also thank Martin, because I've used some of his material, and I thank you for that, Martin, so thanks.
So I think probably you see that there's certain things that we're putting up as possible solutions to some of this, not just for higher education, but also for secondary and primary education and early childhood education. These are things we know work. They're things that we know, the debates rage, but I look around this room and I take the point about the long struggle and I see many, many familiar faces. You know, we've been doing this for a long time. We do know something. We do know how these things work. We do know what works and what doesn't work. And we watch with horror. I mean, I was acknowledging Martin as well for that wonderful genealogy of, you know, the mad romp through all of these things we've had to put up with. And I'm trying to, I was reflecting as you were talking about the sort of things that we have to play with when we're doing the classes that we're teaching. You know, there's some constructivist stuff, there's some cultural awareness stuff that we do need. Two-way we need to offer as a solution. We do need to talk about partnerships, reconciliation. We are talking about Indigenous knowledges. We are talking about the cultural interfaces and the interface and how Indigenous standpoint actually works in these sorts of spaces. All of these things we're trying to articulate in this one little six-week... We haven't... Because they go out for teaching prac, we've got them for probably, what, about 9 or 10 weeks, haven't we? 9 weeks. You know, we want 2 or 3 years with them. This is just for the teachers. How do we cram everything into this one unit and not expect their little brains to explode, you know, sometimes? But we do know that there's a lot of this stuff that works. So in conclusion, probably so we can open it up to questions, I think, the learning activity that's nested within this partnership strategy is designed to be respectful of the diversity of knowledges that the students bring to their learning, but also set high expectations that students will be able to demonstrate the development of their understanding of the issues of mainstream education in Indigenous and other traditionally oriented communities. The learning activity brings together the skills and content knowledge required for the successful completion of the unit, providing a zone of proximal development for the student in this respect. They better understand the need for reliable documentation, that they don't just go and find any Aborigine and ask them about anything and expect it to be expert, but the teacher actually has some ability to source reliable knowledge and go to the right people and talk to them instead of just grabbing someone because they're an Aborigine person or Torres Strait Islander person. We hope that they have a respect for the need to establish collaborative learning partnerships with Indigenous and traditional peoples to ensure that mainstream education occurs in a way that's culturally respectful of the lifeways of these children. The pedagogical design of the activities provide a living context for engagement with things such as reconciliation, but it's also positioned within a broad international framework of the rights of Indigenous and traditional people. And so this is actually a chapter that we've written called Growing Understanding. It's a book in a Rutledge book that's just about to come out called Reconciliation Pedagogies. I'm trying to struggle with some of these ideas and get them out. And also to have conversations, because we've been, you know, this is a fantastic thing that Christine has organised. Thank you, because it's hard to get this cross-fertilisation of ideas. I think to have us all here and listen to what we're all doing, we're really excited to have that opportunity today. So I'll pass over to Henry.
Pardon me. Look, I'd like to just finish on this note is, you know, in the end, it is our kids that I worried about. We have to start with our teachers of our little ones, and our primary level kids, and secondary teachers have to make sure that they keep our kids at school, that they finish what they started. It is no use blaming the kids if the teachers don't know what to do with them. It's their job to know. And I was even allowed to go to secondary school because I was an Aborigine. And our kids should be fighting to stay in school, and our teachers are learning how to keep them there. For me, that's what reconciliation is about in the end. Both sides coming together, doing it different ways. So I guess, you know, from what Zane and I are doing, we're expecting people to teach our kids. If you don't know how to teach our kids, you will never know unless you learn. And that's what we're on about. Get to know how to teach children, especially Indigenous children. And there are, you know, universities and institutions that can help educators do that. And that's what we're trying to do, make sure that there is a better future, a better life for our children. So thanks.